This morning, we're actually starting a new four-part series. And we teach in series in this church, where we go through themes and topics. And in this series, we're going to be going through a theme called There Is More. There is more. And we believe that for every person, every one of you in this room. We believe there's more for you. We believe there's more for your life. We believe that God has more freedom, more joy, more hope, more life, more purpose. He has more for you. And that's really the driver for us in this season, moving into this space and starting here in the southern suburbs, is we believe that across our city, there are a lot of us looking for something more. There's a lot of us, we're saying, we think there's more. I don't know if you've ever had that feeling of like, I'm searching for more in my life, and I'm yet to find it. That's what we want to speak into in this series. And really, so just to give you a bit of context, I'm going to be up here for about 25 minutes now. So if you're new to church, don't worry, we're not going to be here forever. It's like, how long is this guy going to talk for? We're just going to spend a bit of time opening up the Bible. And I want to show you one verse that Jesus talks about in the Bible that I think really speaks to the why it is that we're here and what it is we believe God wants to do in your life. And this verse, we're going to bring it up on the screen, is John 10, verse 10. And Jesus is talking and he says, the thief, so he's referring to our spiritual enemy, the devil. He says, the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. But I, this is Jesus speaking, I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. They may have life and have it to the full. So my hope, my desire for you this morning is that you would discover what it is to have the fullness of life. Because the inference of this verse is that you can have a partial life. You can step into some of what God has for you. You can step into some of the purpose. You can step into some aspects of who He is. But I want fullness for you. I want fullness for me. I want the more that God has for me. And so we're going to be talking in this series about four different things that God has for us. But to kick us off this morning, I need some audience participation this morning. Come on. How many of you have ever had a New Year's resolution? Just show of hands. You've ever had one in your life, ever? Some of us are like, I don't believe in that. That's fine. You're better than us. Some of us have had them. And how many had one this year? This year, some of us? Keep your hand up if you're still on track for your New Year's resolution. Congratulations. That's good. Some hands just like, oh, sorry. I had one last year. I've got a friend who's here today, Jenna, and I kept interacting with her, and she helps to run a running business, and I kept just standing in the dog park doing no exercise whatsoever for like a year, and then Jenna would be there in her workout wear like every day, like, hi, I just did 7 workouts today, how are you? So last year, I was like, right, this is my year, new year, new me kind of vibe. Thank you. So I was like, I'm going to run. And I actually did it. I ran a marathon last year. Now, here's the thing. Here's the way you know someone ran a marathon is that they tell you every time they can, every opportunity. So I was like, launch service, I've got to talk about it. But I will confess that it is February 25th, 2024. And I've not ran this year so far. This is my confession. After the launch, I'm repenting. I'm back to it. But, you know, so some of us, like me this year, our commitments we make, sometimes we struggle to stick to them. And some of them are, like, not that important. But then other things are really important commitments in our life. And I just want to talk this morning about the impact that breaking our commitments can have on us. And we're going to look at the Bible in a little bit about how there's one person in particular who broke some commitments. It was very impactful for. But I think in life we generally make commitments to 3 different groups of people, if you will. The first is we make commitments to ourselves. So we make commitments like my running. It's like, I'm going to be better this year. Or maybe it's like how you speak to people. You're like, you know what, Josh, you're changing. You're going to be better. And then the pressure's on. It's like, I'm sure my wife Meg can tell you that when the pressure's on sometimes, the way I approach conversations can be slightly more heated. We used to talk about heated conversations at home. We didn't have arguments. It was a heated discussion. And sometimes we can make these commitments to ourselves that I want to be better, I want to do better, I'm going to be better, and then it slips away. Or sometimes the even bigger commitments we make are to others. We make commitments to people, like we'll hold hands at the front of a church and we say, till death do us part. And we'll make commitments to one another in marriage. Or we make commitments to friends that we have. You say, hey, if you're ever going through a tough time, I'm there. I've got your back. And then when they show up, you're actually too busy for them. We make commitments in life sometimes we feel ashamed of breaking. Or maybe even someone made a commitment to you. And they said they would come through for you. And actually they didn't. And it's painful. And it's challenging. But I think one of the biggest ones for those of us who have grown up around any kind of context of faith or church or any of that kind of thing is that we can sometimes make commitments to God. This is the classic thing that if you've ever been on a plane and you hit turbulence, and the plane starts shaking. You're like, Lord, if you get me through this one, I will do anything for you. You know, terrified up in the air. And sometimes we make these commitments to God. Maybe it was when you were young and you were in church and you wanted to follow him. But as you grew up, life got hard or things happened. You made commitments. And again, some commitments we make are not a big deal. We break them and we feel fine about it. But for some of us, the commitments we make, it's actually very, very challenging. I just want to bring up the next thought on the screen for us, because sometimes when we break our commitments, the shame of failure can be overwhelming. Yeah. Yeah. I think especially when it's about relationships. Yeah. It can be very difficult when we feel ashamed. And what happens is when we feel failure... Oh, this is for me anyway, I don't know about in your life. When I feel failure, I withdraw and isolate myself. And I start beating myself up. And I start thinking down on myself. And then life just gets harder in lots of different ways. And the emotional pain is challenging. And so what I want to do this morning, church, I want to show us someone in the Bible who this was their experience. And we're going to turn to someone, if you know anything about the Bible, you might have heard of him. His name's Peter. And Peter found himself in a moment where he made a big commitment. Now, Peter is your guy who is like the over-promiser. If you don't know that person in your life, you might be there. No. I can't think of... Sorry. It's that person who's like, yeah, man, I'm with you. Let's go. And this is what Peter says in this moment to Jesus. We're right at towards the moment where Jesus is going to be taken away and crucified, put on the cross. And Peter turns around. They're having food together. It's often referred to as the Last Supper. And this is what it says in Matthew chapter 26. Peter replied, so he's talking to Jesus, even if all fall away. He's like sat around with all the disciples. It's like, even if these guys... fall away on account of you, I never will. Truly I tell you, Jesus answered, this very night before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times. But Peter declared, even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you. And all the other disciples said the same. Jesus, this is one of the most important moments in human history. Whether you believe that Jesus is God or not, that is really an indisputable fact. This is one of the most important moments in human history. Because now there are over 1 billion people around the world who follow Jesus. So this moment is so significant. And in the most significant moment, Peter says, I'm with you to the end. And then just a few verses later, in Matthew 26, 73 to 75, it says, after a little while, those standing there went up to Peter. Jesus, by this point, has been taken. He's been arrested. And they're questioning his disciples. And these people came up and said, surely you are one of them. Your accent gives you away. Then he began to call down curses. And he swore to them, I don't know the man. And immediately a rooster crowed. Then Peter remembered the word Jesus had spoken. Before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times. And he went outside and wept bitterly. He felt overwhelmed by his failure. In the moment it counted, Peter was nowhere to be found. We even know that he's feeling this failure and being overwhelmed by it because we get the description of what happens at the cross. Jesus is being crucified. Who is there? Mary, his mother, is there. Some other women. John is there. Some other guys. Peter is nowhere to be found. He said, I'll be with you to the end, Jesus. And then in his failure, he runs and hides because he's ashamed of what he's done. I've felt times in my life where I've felt shame. I felt ashamed of what I've done. I don't want anyone to know. I'm sure that's just me in the room. No one else, of course. But we have moments in life. And Peter has one of these intense moments. And so what does Peter do when it really matters? He gets away. And then I want us to turn to another book, the book of John, chapter 21. Because what we see here is Peter's response to his failure, to his shame. And so John 21, 2-3, and just a bit of context for those of you who don't know, Peter was, before he was a disciple of Jesus, following him around, he was a career fisherman. He would go around and he would fish. And so it says, Simon Peter, Thomas, also known as Didymus, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples were together. I'm going out to fish, Simon Peter told them, and they said, we'll go with you. So they went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Peter says, I feel like I've failed in this following Jesus thing, so I'm going to go back to my old life. But here's what I love in those verses, if we can throw it back up, Neela. It says, and they said, we'll go with you. We're going to be a church. I just want you to if someone of this church connects with you this morning, I want you to know we're going to be a church that when you're going through something in life, when you're fighting, when you're saying, man, I just want to tap out. I want to go back to my old ways. We're going to be there fighting with you in those moments. We're going to be a church that says, hey, we're in this together. You're not alone. We're going to go with you in the celebration times. We're going to be together. In the hard times, we're going to be together. That's the kind of church that we are going to be. And so we'll keep reading verse 4-6. It says, early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. He called out to them, friends, haven't you any fish? No, they answered. Peter is even failing at the thing he's gone to back to do. He can't catch a break here. This guy is struggling. So Jesus said, throw your net on the right side of the boat and you will find some. When they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. And let's finish it out, 7-9. Then the disciple whom Jesus loved, this is John, said to Peter, it is the Lord. As soon as Simon Peter heard him say, it is the Lord, he wrapped his outer garment round him. He's in the boat, for he had taken it off, and he jumped into the water. It's like Jesus is over there, and Peter suddenly has this moment of, I feel his mercy. He's back. Wow. I felt failure, and now I see him, and I feel different in his presence. Let's carry on. The other disciples followed in the boat, towing the net full of fish, for they were not far from shore, about 100 yards. When they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals there with fish on it and some bread. Jesus, in his moment of failure, In his moment of shame, in his moment of discouragement and disappointment, Jesus shows up. Jesus shows up. And why? Let's throw this up. Jesus blesses Peter because he loves him, not because of what he'd done for him. Sometimes we can think, I need to do more to get back to Jesus. I need to do more. And maybe you wouldn't even say Jesus. Maybe you would use your own language. You say, I need to be a better person. I need to connect to the universe in a different way. I need to, whatever your language set is for this, the reality is you can't by yourself make you good enough for the grace you need. You can't. You are too flawed. I don't know you, but I know you as a human. You're too flawed. You can't do it. You can't figure this out by yourself. And I think deep within us, all of us deep down know that there's more. There's more. And we're saying, God, where, how do I figure out the inner turmoil within me? And in this moment, Peter is wrestling through his shame and his embarrassment and his guilt and his frustrations. And in that moment, Jesus shows up and he says, I'm going to bless you with a haul of fish like you've never seen before. And he says, there's more, Peter. There's more for you. And what is there? There is more grace. There's more grace. What is grace? Grace is the unmerited favor and mercy of God. You didn't deserve it. You haven't done anything for it. But in that moment, Jesus shows up and he says, there is more grace for you. I'm going to come and bless you in a way that you do not deserve. I'm going to bless you more than you could possibly imagine. And is there water? Thanks. I just saw it happening on the front row. God bless you. Grace. Cheers. And so Jesus shows up in that moment with his grace and mercy. And he says, I want to bless you. And so what I want to do for us, church, as we come towards the close of this message, is I want to give you three thoughts that maybe you can do something with this week from this message. Okay? The first encouragement I have for you this morning is this. Dare to cast your net again. Dare to cast your net again. I love in this story that Peter had the courage. See, Peter has been out all night. He's failed all night trying to catch these fish, and it hasn't happened. He's frustrated, he's disappointed, and then Jesus shows up, he says, cast it on the right side of the boat. I think most of us would turn around and say, Jesus, I've been trying over here. What do you think I've been up to all night? But Peter says, okay, let's try one more time. I think for some of us, there's areas of our lives where you've got to cast your net on the other side again. Where you've just got to say, okay, maybe I've been trying for a while. Maybe I've been believing for a while. But I'm going to believe again. Let me just be as bold as to say, I think for some of us, that's about the church. I think some of us, we've believed that, or we believed in Jesus. Maybe we still do believe in Jesus, but the church let us down. We've been disappointed by the church. We've experienced pain and hurt in the church. And my encouragement to you this morning is to cast your net again. It's to say, don't give up on the church. Find a healthy one. And again, if I can be as bold as to say, I believe this is a healthy one. So maybe that's your next step. You've got to say, I'm going to try church again. Maybe for some of us, you've heard about Jesus, but you've never followed him. Or you once did, but you haven't for a long time. Let me tell you, it's worth betting on Jesus. Just risk it. Or even try it for 6 months. If it don't work out, you go back to your old life. That's how confident I am. If you throw yourself all in, Jesus will minister to you, bless you, pour out his grace on your life in ways that you could not imagine. Dare to cast your net again. Believe again. And I believe today that the Spirit of God is here to awaken dreams again within people that you once believed. You once believed, but you're saying, today I've got to come back. I'm done running. I'm done hiding. I'm going to cast my nets again. Let me give you a second thought from these verses that I see. Jesus is waiting on your shore. Jesus is waiting on your shore. I love that Jesus is there. He says, hey, just cast it again. And he's seeing all of these fish. The disciples are like, and John knew, it's like, it's the Lord. It's him. And so then Peter throws himself overboard to get to Jesus. He's waiting for you because he loves you so deeply. He loves you so deeply. He cares for you so deeply. Let me just say that. Jesus cares for you. He cares for you. Oh, but I've been away. He cares for you. But I've never believed in it. He cares for you. Whatever your story, whatever your background, whatever your context, whatever your belief, he loves you so passionately that he went to the cross so that you could find life. And not a partial life, a life in all its fullness. And church, I got to tell us this morning, this is why we're here this morning. It's because there is a love so pure, there is a love so good, there is a love so gracious that he wants to pour it out on you this morning. And hey, listen to me. If you don't believe that yet, or ever, that's fine. You could still find a home in this church. You come along. Keep coming. Keep coming. Because I believe that as you come, you're going to be blessed. Now again, whether you choose to believe that's Jesus, that's up to you. But I believe you're going to be blessed. And so he's waiting for you, ready for you to come home. Final thought is this before we pray together. If we just pull it up, your greatest failure cannot overpower the cross. The greatest failure cannot overpower the cross. I want you to imagine it like we're playing a game of cards and you keep trying to, oh, I've got this one. And the cross is, it's like the ace. It's the trump card. Every time you try and bring Jesus, you're like, but God, I failed in this area of my life. And he comes, the cross. You go, Jesus, but I'm still wrestling through these addictions, the cross. But even last night, I was in sexual sin and I was living a life distant from you. The cross of Jesus is enough for you. But I've experienced divorce. The cross of Jesus is enough for you. Jesus' grace is undefeated. And I'm just telling you, as someone who's experienced the grace and mercy of God, that you can find inner peace. I think so many of us wrestle with these anxieties, and so we try and find coping mechanisms to overcome them. We wrestle with these different ways, and then we fill our lives with other things to try and make ourselves feel better. But the truth is, the cross of Jesus is the only thing that will steal your soul. Now, am I saying that your life is then going to be perfect afterwards? No, I'm not at all. But I'm saying it is the answer. It is the answer. And you can find grace in your time of need. You can find it today.